This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Fleeta Brown is here from Michigan, and she also teaches in Washington State. And she has a new book. She's touring the country with this new book. And here she is with a new poem, Fleeta Brown.
The poem I want to read right now is an older poem from this collection, Buying the King-Sized Bed. My husband and I lived in a small house, and then when we moved to a bigger one, we got a king-size bed. We went all the way from a small bed, you know, a double, to a king-size, buying the king-size bed. I'm already thinking of rolling around that expanse, tossing a leg without entangling. The way I am, though, I see all the possibilities for loss. I see us pillowed and billowed, supported in exactly the right hollows by ergonomically designed pocketed coils, while beneath it all, the pea under a royal height, the oppressed, the down-smashed, sleep in despoiled cardboard boxes, or three on one frayed blanket. Think of us spread out, tongues on the rampage, marking where we'll kiss. Oh, wild God, how can you permit this excess? How could any of us gauge the exact distance at which people turn strangers to each other? In our double bed, called double, but we have been bumper cars and cliffhangers on it for years, our shorter ancestors troubling us still. I can't even raise my knee without poking my dear love in the groin. We have been close. We have understood each other the way people in tight houses start growing into each other at a molecular level, absorbing each other's pheromones, yelling and slamming doors too, or else they are lost inside each other. They would have grand homes if they could. They would forge on like jet skis through the foyer and out to the grand sea. They would send a wire to say, I still love you. The sweet old world is longing to be loose and light. All night long it stares up at the chilled stars. This is a sticky business, finding the peak distance for love, knowing our bodies will be nothing someday, wanting to hear them make their delicious, reassuring sounds, bobbing against each other.
Oh, Fleeta Brown, you never disappoint me. Fleeta Brown, former poet laureate of the state of Delaware, in her king-size bed. And it's delicious. That's a well-loved poem. And it's in the book, The Woods Are on Fire, New and Selected Poems. And this was selected by Ted Kooser for the University of Nebraska Poetry Series. Brand new. And how do you say what you've put in this book? You selected the poems you like the best, and then you added new poems?
I'll tell you, what happened is I had a whole new single collection ready to go, and then Ted asked me to do this new and selected, and he said, you know, if you put out two books in 1 year, this is probably, he said, I've done that, it doesn't work very well. I just wonder if you'd be willing to include, he said, you can include as many of the new poems as you want in this book. Well, I lost a sleepless, had a sleepless night thinking about it. And finally I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll just forget my collection that I had spent all this time trying to get organized, and I will take a lot of those poems and put them in here. So there are 48 new poems in here.
Ted Kooser was the former U.S. Poet Laureate of the United States, we might add. So you didn't get all of the new manuscript in?
A lot of it.
Okay, so we have some cuttings on the floor we can put in the next book. So Fleeta Brown, tell us what this book is about. If you look at the canon of your work and you look at these selections, who are you? What triggered these? What's in this book? If you had to describe what's in this book, what do you say?
Wow. I say, first of all, there are 7 books in here.
Previous
plus the new
books.
Poems.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, previous books. Actually, it's pretty much the history of my whole career. I mean, it's from my first book. The only book I left out is the one called The Devil's Child, and it's too dark and difficult. And Ted and I talked about it and decided those poems just, there was no way I could make them fit comfortably. So you ask me who I am as a poet, and all I can tell you is that there's certainly an awful lot of poems about family. I mean, that's a huge focus. But then I don't know. I'm a poet. I'm a visual person. I'm a very and so they're
imagistic, very imagistic.
I jump at images
and relationships.
Yeah,
you do not shy from relationships.
No,
and you do the tough stuff. You do tough stuff. Everyone writes about family. These are the that's the poet's job, but when you write about it, I've never heard it before. So Fleeta Brown has won many awards, all of which have disappeared from your cell phone. But I can tell you, one was the Philip Levine Award.
Yeah, I won the Philip Levine. In fact, I was the first winner of the Philip Levine Prize.
And was it the Felix Pollack also?
Yeah.
Now, I just have a good memory.
You
do have a good
memory.
Because the cell phone isn't working.
You do have a good memory.
And how many other awards have you won?
Well,
just say a couple.
I don't know. I've won a push card, and I've been a finalist for National Poetry Series several times. And
are you getting enough? Do you want more? Do you think enough people know your work?
I think I'm not very self-promoting. And
no, you're not.
It'd be better, my husband's always telling me it would be a lot better if I were, but I just can't.
And guess what? In spite of yourself, you're one of the most beloved poets in America. So let's go on and hear why. Give us a poem.
Well, when you started talking about family, I immediately turned to a poem that I hadn't planned to read, but I'm going to read just because you said that.
Fleeta Brown.
It's called Chicken Bone. I can almost see her rolling her eyes, trying to get her breath, my father coming behind to do the Heimlich maneuver in Mrs. Pete's restaurant. Mrs. Pete herself, she of the $4.95 dinner, dessert included, stepping in to do it right. Before this, what? They are talking about the heat, maybe, the grosbeak on the feeder, the rusting screens. How long could that go on? The menu could take a while. A missing earring. This is the way they spend their lives in our absence. This and the young and the restless. I'm finding out what makes the young restless, he says. We children and the soaps swarming around their chicken and mashed potatoes like starved ghosts while they behave politely to each other. God knows charity and violence having closed together above them like a little tent at last. Mm. The third thing they refuse to speak of, the limit to everything. Guess what they do now? They figure the tip on a napkin, not 1 cent extra for the life they're in.
Charity and violence, like a little tent above them. How do you think? What a great poem. I remember that. I remember all of your poems. I wish I could forget something because I can remember every poem you've ever written. So give us another one because we're just getting used to your voice and getting to know Fleeta Brown here at the Library of Congress. It is The Poet and the Poem, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Okay. If names started coming loose, cow, for instance, might hook itself like a horseshoe around a fence post. Chair might land on a cat, try to assimilate. Chickadee could shudder loose to discover itself stayed roomy with a two-car garage. The ones left behind, vaporous, probably afraid, not yet knowing how to live inside discontinuities. Meanwhile, cow would quite naturally be grafting itself as efficiently as possible to the fence post, upright, unflinching, drawing no flies. Like the rest of us, it would be willing to go for a small part of the truth, a little more onomatopoeia, a little less floating. Try to think of it, your name, the one you've repeatedly handed out to strangers, now landed, say, onto the huge steel patio grill. I'll just throw these burgers on the Marianne, someone might say, and you, the you that's running on empty, would be moving like a rumor among named objects, not unnoticed entirely, but treated with the maneuvering of the other guests, who know they must know you but can't recall. Makes you want to hang on, doesn't it? It does me. To admit to myths foul beliefs you never thought you'd settle for. That's the part of you that wants to live inside mere obedience forever. Mm. Place the salad fork on the outside, pass the potatoes clockwise. But then suppose there's the lightness beginning to come on, incredible continents inside you rising and breaking apart, the voice you never knew was yours. Suppose it's so good it has no name.
Fleeta Brown, here's what you do. You have the direct address in your poem. You telescope into the poem. You come out of the poem. You make editorial comments. You make philosophical statements. You make interior judgments. You do so many different points of view in a poem, and it keeps it moving. That's where the energy is. And I like very much about the obedience you wish you have been raised with, because I want to bring that up. Your poems pretend to be a good girl. But beneath them, there is such a tumult of rebellion. Uh-huh. And I feel that. And it is not anarchistic or anything. It's just there. You mention it in the poem. There's a stripe in you that wants to be heard beyond the perfect setting of the dinner table. Would you agree that that's your personality?
Oh, I think you should be my manager or my therapist. I don't know which one. Perfect.
I think I've hit it, because I learned a lot about you when you're in your earlier books, when some of the girls were listening to Bach and you were listening to Elvis Presley. That was my first clue. But anyway, underneath, so you have many subtexts under your poems. They are quite accessible, quite revelatory, but then there's yet another river running under them. So let's have another poem to see if I'm right.
Okay.
Fleeta Brown's at the Library of Congress.
This poem is called Wild Turkeys. Where we are in northern Michigan, especially on our lake, there are whole, I don't guess you call them herds of turkeys. I'm not sure, but anyway, they're wild turkeys. And they run back and forth across the road. And so I happen to be attracted to things that aren't attractive, which kind of is to your thesis. And this has two parts, Wild Turkeys. Wild turkeys, necks jutted out, wattles flapping, heads and bodies turning, all the same creature, coming from somewhere, going back to somewhere, ragged, black, and blood red, as if they were half dead already, chewed up. They remind me of Poe's bird, ghastly, grim, and ancient, ugly as Roy Orbison or George Eliot, ugly as Sir Walter Walpole, Lyle Lovett, Eleanor Roosevelt, the ones who radiate ugly until a person begins to lust after it. Lust like street kids, pants below their underwear, hair screaming bloody murder, shoving beauty out of the way, as if the sonnets, the great waterfalls with their tropical pools, even Britney Spears, were all distractions from the fierce entropy, the smashed and flying glass, like bits of bodies blown from tanks. 2. The motion at the edge of the woods is the turkeys with horny splay feet step gripping with their sure knowledge that the earth is what's moving, not them. They're holding on with the purposefulness of the damaged, the infirm, the wretched, who've put all their interest into survival until they're lean, coded, all meaning the same thing. I get this way, the old pain gone, but still on the edges, a damage of the heart that doesn't hurt now, but knows what it feels like. The turkey head, the beak, the real things that went on, the divorces, or rather the agonizing over them, my mother's death, or rather agonizing over her life. Mm. It's the surroundings, not the thing, the ugly things I've made out of my thinking, what I've hung on to, my deep sleep of hanging on, while the wild turkeys go on back and forth across the road, oblivious.
There's more of the same, the contrast. Someone would say, ugly, but you say, shoving beauty out of the way. That's what a poet is. Where were you born?
I was born in Columbia, Missouri, but we lived for a year in Akron, Ohio, and a year in Middlebury, Vermont. My father was trying to finish his PhD, which he didn't ever finish. He stayed ABD all of his career.
And where did you go to your undergraduate school?
University of Arkansas. He taught at the University of Arkansas for a number of years.
And where did you get your PhD?
University of Arkansas, because I was married and had kids. I was stuck there.
What was your dissertation? Do you remember it?
Yeah, it was on William Dean Howells, an American novelist.
The reason I ask is you have a Southern accent, and I've never known where that came from.
Arkansas.
Oh.
Yeah, because I spent 22 years in Arkansas. I grew up. We moved to Arkansas when I was going into the fifth grade.
I see. And then I knew you when you were in Delaware. You were a professor at the University of Delaware.
Yeah.
Were you head of the English department? Your husband was.
We were both in the English department.
Right.
Yeah.
Then you retired and you went to a cabin on a lake.
Well, that sounds romantic, actually. You know, we do have a cottage that's been in my family for 99 years now, and that's why we moved to northern Michigan. But we didn't move there to the cottage because the cottage isn't a place that you'd want to spend your whole time. But, so we live in Traverse City, which is about an hour away.
I see, yeah. But it's cold.
Uh-huh,
is it cold?
It is cold. It is cold. But
what do you do all day, Fleeta? What do you do all day? I've always known you to be an arts advocate in every committee in Delaware, in every school, running all the things with the governor. And now do you rest? Do you write?
Oh.
What does it mean to be retired?
Actually, Traverse City is a fantastic book town. Fantastic. We have a national writer series. We bring in New York Times bestsellers one after the other.
Oh, Fleeta Brown is at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and she's going to give us another poem. Tell us the name of this book.
The book is The Woods Are on Fire, and you know, because that's the title of the book, I think I should read you the title poem, which is it begins the book, but the others are in chronological order, but this is actually a new poem. I was reading about how they work with large forest fires, and the way they do it is that they start backfires to suck up the oxygen so that it will decrease the power of the big fire. So this ends up with Matisse and Beethoven and Elizabeth Bishop in it, and you have to think of Elizabeth Bishop's poem, The Waiting Room. Backfires. The woods are on fire. The woods are seething and blistering. Matisse, stuck in his wheelchair, is scissoring shapes, directing his assistant to pin them to a board. Beethoven is solving musical problems inside the soundless chamber of his head. Elizabeth Bishop is sitting in the waiting room, studying naked women with her poised intellect. She cries out, "Oh no, it's not her, but from the other room." The wildfire of her heart is about to cross the gap cut by the firemen. A small backfire has been set near the bigger one to use up the oxygen that fuels it. You have to know where the bigger one is headed. You do not know where the bigger one is headed, so it is always the backfires. Even the water in the hoses can catch fire. The fire is not really in the water, but the water gets drunk up. If you were on fire, I would roll you in a blanket, as I have been told. There is a cardinal out there against the snow. Such a cliche, but a dramatic example of the tiny backfire that keeps us from burning alive.
Mm. And so much of that has a metaphor for our times, I think.
I was thinking particularly of writing and poetry of course, I don't know what I was thinking about when I wrote it, but after I wrote it, I thought, well, this is really, it's really about writing. We've got these poems that function as backfires against whatever big fire there is.
Oh, this is true. Yes. And it also speaks about everything that has a contrast, everything that works against itself to help, but is really a double-edged problem. Now, you went through a very grave illness this past couple of years, and some of that's reflected in your book very bravely. Tell me the kind of energy it takes when you are in extremis. How do you move into art? How do you summon what you need to move into art? Do you wait until the pain is gone and remember the imagery? Do you collect it while you're experiencing it? Because you have written really epic poems about this illness. Tell me how you did that.
I love your questions. I didn't write as many poems. There are people who've gotten whole books of poems, beautiful poems.
Jory Graham just did.
And there's a young woman, not so young, I guess, Zavinia Orlovsky, I think her name is, who's written a beautiful book of poems about her cancer. But I wrote a blog that I kept going once a week faithfully during cancer, and I've turned that into a book just this last year called My Wobbly Bicycle, which is the title of my blog, which I still do all the time. I decided to do the book to publish it myself because I'm giving all the proceeds to the Cal Family Cancer Center, their wellness area in Traverse City. They provide low-cost massages and the kinds of things that and meditation classes and that kind of thing. And I just thought this is what I want to do with this book. And so I did that.
But you trusted yourself through this. I mean, instead of backing away, and the blog made you do it.
It was easier for me to write prose than poems during that time. I just felt flat-footed, you know. I felt hit flat, and so
you felt.
Yeah. So I did write some poems.
You felt as if you were on a wobbly bicycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fleeta Brown. Let's hear more.
I'll read you a poem about finding out that I had cancer. It's about, you know, how it is when something really bad, you find out something really bad, and you go to bed at night, and you feel fine. And all of us have had that experience, all of us. And then you wake up the next morning, and for a split second, everything's normal, and then it comes back to you. So this is called News. Maybe the sperm lugged it along from the dim past when it crashed into the egg. What had gone wrong? What switch switched at the least opportune moment? What moment in my childhood was the final, unbearable one? Which breeze blowing the sprayer chemicals back in my face? I kept on living forever until it was too late for that. Last night we left the window open, and Wally the cat spent the night, apparently, watching what he wanted but could never have. We, with our big bodies, hugged the bed, sleeping through the news we wanted to refuse anyway. Wouldn't we have murdered in our minds the Syrian government troops? Wouldn't we have yelled at the kids who painted graffiti on the bridge? But Wally said, why howl at the moths on the screen? Why not just remain wakeful to the inscrutableness of spring's open window? He didn't really say this. The overhead fan was turning, and I couldn't hear what he said. My mind was on a little train. I was eating my lunch on the train, spilling onions from my sandwich. I had a banana, too. No, a big yellow bus I mistook for a banana. And the onions, something not quite right. Oh, yes, it was the world coming back to me. The school bus rumbling on our brick street, full of kids who don't yet know how long the past will last as their bodies grow.
Oh, what a lovely, great line. What a poem. There you go again. You come at it from so many angles. You come at it from the narrator. You come at it from the heart. You come at it from the image. You have many stripes, many stripes. Before we have a closing poem, I know you teach advanced graduates of poetry in Washington at a low residency college. What is the name of the college?
It's Pacific Lutheran College. The program is the Rainier Writing Workshop.
Well, I just want to know one big question. If you had to look at all of those students that you've been helping on the postgraduate level who want to be professional poets, what is the one thing in common you think they all need?
Discipline. They need to just Well, of course, you know, what anybody would say is they need to read a lot, but they have to stick to it. They have to
stay
at it.
So every one of them, you feel that is it. It's not reading more. It's not apprenticing themselves to others. It is discipline. What do you call discipline?
Continuing and not quitting and trusting the fact that if you do stay with it, that you'll get better.
And what does staying with it mean?
It means writing and reading and writing and reading and writing and reading. And you need feedback. You need to have somebody who's been at it longer than you help. That's really helpful. I never went to an MFA program myself, and so I've just blundered through, you know. But what I learned in the PhD program was what I desperately needed, which was discipline, which was read a lot and stay with it. And when you're sick of it and you feel like you don't want to do any more, keep on.
And discipline means being a disciple too. It isn't a punishment. The word actually means being mm-hmm. a disciple too. Mm-hmm. And you are a disciple to your work and have been a great icon and model. So in closing, we would like to hear a final poem from Phyllida Brown.
This is the last poem in this collection. It's called Mushrooms. It is so damp here, it is like an exhaled breath. The earth has opened its air holes and sent itself up in the form of little castles to check out the other side. Some are bright orange, like small lava bubbles. One is white with ruffled fringe, and there is a colony of other bursts, giant popcorn coated with cedar needles, not to mention Indian pipes at attention blackened with age. I wouldn't say magic, so easily stumbled over and broken to bits. They come on strong, then withdraw as if they've never been. When you get old, you're not bored with mushrooms. You like to see the bubbling, which is like a champagne toast. You're interested now in the lively conversation underneath.
That's Phyllida Brown. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support by Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue and Candace Katz. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.